SoFi, the all-in-one super app for banking, borrowing, and investing. Earn industry-leading APY, get great loan rates, and trade stocks. SoFi, get your money right. Banking products and loans offered by SoFi Bank N.A., NMLS 696891. Brokerage and active investing products offered through SoFi Securities, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC.
We're here. It's the 3rd of April. I mean, Elizabeth's like, what are we talking about? Yeah. I mean, the month is going by.
Is it really, though, going by like
is
that?
It really is.
Wednesday, April 3rd.
It's been a long
time. Yeah, I used to work at Carvel, as I've probably told you. No, I did. What are you laughing at? I worked at Carvel because back in the day, Wednesday and Sunday at Carvel.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I was very good at making the cakes. So what you do is you get the soft ice cream. You do this before the crowds come in. Nobody cares. Want me to do this?
This is like how to make fudgy the whale. This is in,
we'll
put it in the show notes.
No, because in the soft ice cream is only vanilla and chocolate.
Yeah.
But you'd have all different color flavored cakes.
Yeah.
So in the mornings you'd come in and make strawberries. You'd do it out of the soft machine, which was great.
Yeah.
And then you'd put them in something called a shock box.
Yeah.
Which freezes them like, you know, that shit is frozen. Uh-huh. And that's when you would decorate the cakes while they're really frozen. Then you put it back in the shock.
So there's a lot. You just said soft machine. There's a line in the song Truckin' by the Grateful Dead. It said Dallas got the soft machine. You know what that stands for?
Too close to New Orleans.
Yeah, look at you.
I know.
You know what the soft machine is in Dallas?
Not really.
Margarita machine. That's something you know pretty well. I mean, she's going margarita soft machine over Carvel soft machine.
Just won't let me be.
Should we get to this? Should we do this?
Market call.
There we go.
EY is here from SoFi. And I got to tell you, she walked in. I was down in the lobby of this building on the fast money call because I didn't want to get on the elevator because I probably would have called with a drop.
Yep.
So Elizabeth saw me. We exchanged presently. So I'm like, what the hell's going on with your hair?
It's raining outside.
It is.
There's a lot of humidity. And it's just, you know, I grew like an extra head of hair overnight. Yeah.
Anyway, you two look cute together in the black. Let's throw the rundown up because you know what? Seems to be a benign day, but again, things are happening. No cuts coming soon. I agree with that, by the way. And by the way, if you're bullish in the market, you're actually hoping for that, I think. Stock market warning sign, ? And of course, if it's Wednesdays with EY, we're going to take some Q&A at the end of the session.
So Guy just said something, Liz. It sounded like a question. If you are bullish of the market, let's throw up the Fed speak here. So we had Fed Chair Powell speaking at Stanford. We had Bostic this morning suggesting one cut this year comes after the election. Look at that. So Liz, if you are bullish of equities, is this good news that the Fed wants to take a kind of, you know, kind of guarded approach to the rate cuts here? Is that going to be, because we've talked about the correlation between rates going higher and equities over the last kind of, what, month and a half or a year and a half or so?
Mm-hmm. I don't like this answer, but it does depend on your time frame.
Yeah.
If you're bullish of equities for the long term, you do want the Fed to wait. Because as Powell has said over and over again, inflation that's out of control doesn't work for anybody. Doesn't work for employees, doesn't work for employers, doesn't work for consumers, doesn't work for anybody, doesn't work for the dollar. So you do want them to be careful about when they start cutting if you're long-term bullish. If you're short-term bullish, no, you probably want them to cut sooner because that's going to get interpreted as easier monetary policy, supportive, dovish, the Fed put, all of those things. But I think if they do it too soon, it reignites inflation. I think inflation is already reigniting, which is something I talked about in my note today.
That's right.
But I do. I think that you want them to be strong about this. And Bostic really dropped a hammer today.
He did. Good for him. Now, the one first level thinking would suggest the reason why 10-year yields are going higher is because of all this. I don't think that is, in fact, the case. I think yields are going higher because I do think, you know, the inflationary pressures are a problem, which is an entirely different conversation. But just through the lens of are rate cuts bullish or bearish, I would submit that if they're able to sort of withstand the urge to cut rates this year, it's probably because things are sort of sliding along. And I think that should
sliding along the economy,
just
good.
Moving along, the economy's good, doing its thing, you know, the whole thing.
All right.
So now the other side of that is they can't cut because inflation is a problem. And we're going to, you know, gasoline, clearly a problem. Soft commodities that we talk about, clearly a problem. Some of these, obviously, industrial metals, clearly a problem. So we'll see.
All right. So Liz, if we have a hot jobs number on Friday, let's just say there's some stuff in there that just says that there's upward pressure, continued upward pressure on wages. Okay. Mm-hmm. Guy just mentioned soft commodities. We're talking about yields higher. We're talking about a dollar that's firmed. Okay. So when you put all those things together and you say to yourself, what does that mean for S&P 500 margins? What does it mean for the earnings estimates that are what, up 12% this year?
And, 12.5% actually.
12.5%. And a lot of folks coming into this year expected inflation to be well on its way to the Fed's 2% target. So all those things that we just mentioned to be lower, including yield, by the way, right? There were 6 rate cuts that were priced in. So I guess my point is, at some point, are we going to get back focusing on S&P 500 earnings, the likelihood of achieving them, especially if you have margin pressure, because that would be the thing that would halt this ability to get to high single digits, let alone double digit S&P earnings growth this year.
Yeah, I do think that we'll get back to that. And just for everybody watching at home or wherever you watch our lovely show, we've got non-farm payrolls coming on Friday. Also included in that is the unemployment rate, but then you get average hourly earnings and average weekly hours worked, all of that stuff. So we'll get a read on how much wages are cooling or are not cooling. The expectation right now is that they will cool in a year over year mark. So 4.3% was wage growth, hourly wage growth last time, expected to go down to 4.1%. But that's obviously higher than inflation itself. So I do think we will get to a point where we're talking about that again. But it's this odd, I don't know if it's a conundrum. I don't know if it's a predicament. It's this whole thing of we know the cumulative inflation numbers are high, right? 20%, especially for the non-negotiable items that every consumer has to buy. Yet everybody keeps spending money. So there's that question of, well, where is the money coming from? Is it coming from credit? Is it stimulus that's left over? Is it that they're just making more money? It seems like there's more money being spent than there should be, and it hasn't taken its bite yet. This is another one of those things that I feel like hasn't taken its bite yet. Wage growth has come down a little bit, but revenues have come down because inflation has come down. And that's what we talked about for a lot of last year. If the top line is falling, if inflation is falling, the top line is falling, right? And if wage growth stays where it is, even, it's going to eat into margins. So maybe it will finally this year be something that comes out in earnings calls that, you know what, wage growth is putting pressure on it, and we need to pay attention to that more.
By definition, and I'm not doing this to be a jerk, but I think conundrums almost by definition are odd. So saying it's an odd conundrum, it's like the jackasses that do the sports, the young rookie for the Yankees. Yeah.
Hey, but listen, guy,
that's a stupid thing to say. Young rookie.
You've been doing TV for 18 years.
I've never said young rookie.
Hold on. But you know that sometimes just things come in your head and you don't get a redo.
No, I'm not saying this. I started by saying.
I know.
I'm not saying it to be a wise guy.
But you call them jackasses.
No. The guys on TV that say they're the same people over. That young rookie, look, you know what? Shut the F up. Okay. You know what? I mean, unless you're some 36-year-old that's been mired in the minor leagues, like Kevin Costner, for example, and Bull Durham.
Yes.
You're not a young rookie.
Correct.
By the way,
what happens when people say deja vu all over?
That's another,
But isn't that a yogi-ism?
Yogi said it.
Yeah, but
it's
okay for him to say it. All right. But at the time when Yogi was saying these things, do you think he was just a meme? Like he got away with it? Because you know what I'm saying. He was like a living like meme probably back then. All right, here, I want to go to something.
Don't denigrate the life of Lawrence Peter Bearer.
So I want to do two things right here.
Right, one.
I want to throw up this tweet from Dan Niles, friend of the show. He runs a Satori Fund. He's been on the show with us, on the pods with us.
Been on Fast Money.
Stock market has ignored rising oil and bond yields all year, but was yesterday a warning sign. This makes reaction to the NFP on Friday. We just talked about that. Starting an earnings season next week, much more important. Misses like Tesla deliver are likely to be punished. Let's pull up an S&P chart, a 1 year. I'd love to see if Amanda can do this, and I know she can on our beautiful FactSet charts. A line from the October low in the S&P up until, right, basically, let's do an uptrend here. Something really interesting happened yesterday with that one-day reaction
starting
to higher yield, the higher dollar, to higher oil, to fundamental. Ooh, look, see what happens? So that price yesterday, that little tick that we have, and the one that we have today, is below the uptrend that has been in place since late October. And what's most important that is that when it came back and checked back to that guy in January, if you see that, it just held it like a what?
Like a boss.
Like a boss. So from a technical standpoint, do you think that is interesting to you? Is it the first interesting thing that we've seen in this chart that we put up every day?
One of the things that we've said is if the market were to just go sideways for a period of time, that line which goes higher each day, you're going to violate the line. Yeah. So in order for that to stay in, you're going to need the market to continue to build on itself. We said at a certain point, sideways action is going to be no bueno. So I like the fact that the Annihilator is, that's his nickname.
The Annihilator.
Elizabeth laughed. You never heard that before?
Just so you know, I think so. Guy and I have known Dan for decades. I knew him when he was on the sell side in the late 90s and the early 2000s. And then when he started on the buy side and started, he was at Neuberger for years. He started coming on CNBC. And I've always thought he's great. And he's been great. He's been coming on OK Computer, the tech pod that I do that drops every Wednesday in your favorite podcast stores. There are people, but he also came on but he came on with us. Remember we did the day of the NVIDIA GTC. He came on Market Call with us. It was awesome. And that was great. So check out Dan's work. But I just think it's interesting that tweet that he put out there. Liz, how much do some of these technical things come into play for you? I know it's a tiny input, but do you take a look at something like that, break of that uptrend? That's important.
Honestly, yesterday I sat with Mario and we charted the last two recessions, and we did basically tech or semiconductors as the market line. And then we did moving averages and we charted Fed hikes and we charted the unemployment rate, because it's not necessarily a technical chart, but the trends matter and the times when things cross under certain lines matter. And you can watch it, obviously hindsight's 2020, but you can watch when the trend changes and see where all the indicators were pointing to and understand why people get confused and why people have debates over whether or not it's going up or down. This matters for sure. I think that I don't know that it's a conclusive piece of evidence that says we're headed down 20% or anything, but it is a pause in enthusiasm. It indicates a pause in enthusiasm. And I did not see Dan's tweet before I wrote my piece today, but it just so happens I brought some charts.
So wait, hold on. So you write a piece? Yeah. What goes on here? So we get a preview of it on Wednesday's market call,
you know,
and it drops. Where's it drop? Where can we find it?
On
the
SoFi blog. Okay. All of my social.
Oh, there it is. SoFi.com/blog. And you can follow Liz at Liz Young Strat. She's on the Insta. She's on the Gram. And
she's all over the place.
And she's also on the Twitter.
Before we get, I want to do her note. Okay.
But
a couple things. We work with you on Mondays.
Correct.
On the tape.
Yeah. And Wednesdays. Uh-huh. So you might think the only time these two bozos talk about me are on false. We actually bring you up all the time in absentia.
She got a shout out on Fast Money a week or two ago.
I did. And she was watching and she's like, jerk. She actually texted me. Like, I don't know what that means. Yeah. But we were talking about something you said about the duration between the last rate hike and the first cut. And oddly enough, you must have been watching or something.
Oh, weird.
Because you there was no sincerity in it. There is a tweet. You put it out on the Twitter.
Yeah.
So let's look at this, because we actually then overlaid some of these graphs on top of it. So put up Elizabeth's tweet and look at the days from last hike to first cut and where we are now.
Yeah. Actually, I wasn't watching. I don't know when you mentioned it. So this is pure coincidence, frankly. But Mario and I have tweeted this today because of what Bostic said. He said that we might not get a cut until the fourth quarter and it might just be one. If we get to that November meeting, which is on November 7th, 2024, that will be 337 days from the last hike to the first cut and the longest pause that we've ever experienced. My outlook this year, I said this on our podcast on Monday, my outlook this year was called A Cycle for the Ages. And I think we might actually have it.
Wait,
we
you
might
have a podcast the longest... away from us?
No, on our...
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you meant the important part. Because she does have a great podcast that you can also find on the SoFi.
The important part.
It's called The Important Part, Liz.
That's correct.
Yes, sorry.
So anyway, something to watch. This doesn't necessarily mean that something bad is going to happen, but it is an indication that instead of saying this time is different or everything is new and the market isn't going to react or the business cycle is canceled, it's not canceled. It might just be longer than usual.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's this note that I write. You know what's not on people's bingo cards is in the first paragraph of this note, I say the word pigtails because I used the great Willie Nelson as my inspiration.
So you have pigtails?
Yeah.
Long braided pigtails.
That's
have
attractive.
You ever seen a picture
you know
of
who
Willie
else
Nelson?
Does? Your boy Snoop Dogg.
Huh?
Snoop Dogg has pigtails too.
The Snoop.
And those two guys are buds. By the way, while we're on music, before we get to that, I just want to hit this because our friend Doug Cass, you know, over there at Real Money and Seabreeze Capital, he said the soft machine is definitely not margaritas. He said this is from a deadhead who's seen 77 concerts. Uh-huh. That's Doug. He's our main man. He is a multifaceted
I had no
guy.
Idea. You but brought
I,
it up. Not
I know,
me.
But I'm going to, and listen, I'm going to, I don't have time to read it right now, but I, maybe Doug will put it out there for the people here. But I once heard an interview, I think, of Robert Hunter and Jerry Garcia, who wrote that song, uh-huh. I'm pretty sure. But, you know, I could be wrong. I'm sorry, Liz. So away from Pigtails and Willie and Snoop Dogg and the Grateful Dead here.
Well, so I wrote about the rise in yields and the recent rise in yields, particularly this week. We've had a 20 basis point rise just this week. So mm-hmm. just in April. And the title of the piece is On the Rise Again. Get it?
Oh, man.
Yeah,
see that on the road again. You're welcome. It's a Willie Nelson song.
You reached that, didn't you? I mean,
and then there's a section called "Commodities Are Always on My Mind."
You were always on my mind.
Yeah, and the last part is "Don't let your babies grow up to be bond vigilantes."
That's pretty good stuff. I mean, guy, it's some pretty good stuff.
Yep. Anyway, okay. So some charts that I think we can throw up.
Please.
Yield rise driven by both growth and inflation. This is the assumption. Right. It's that, OK, the 10-year is going up faster than the 2-year. Mm-hmm. Everything is hunky dory because growth is stronger. Inflation expectations are going up, but only because demand is strong. So look at this chart. We're looking at the real 10-year yield, which is that dark blue line, and then the 10-year break even inflation rate. The fact that the 10-year break even inflation rate is moving up is not a good thing, because at a time when we're trying to control inflation, obviously we don't want this to be happening. But this is a very close relationship and is probably going to stay a close relationship. So let's move on to the next chart. And then we take it a step further. What is going to happen and what else can we watch with inflation? Oil has obviously gone up. We know this throughout the year. Now, look, we're still below the peak of 2023. We're still well below that big spike that happened in 2022. So not at alarming levels. I think it was about $86 a barrel the last time I checked before I got here. But look at how tight this relationship is. I talk about relationships a lot, and there are some relationships that are having problems, but this one is not having problems. It has stayed tight. It's oil prices and that 10-year break-even inflation rate. So here's the thing. Here's the rub, or another conundrum, mm-hmm. is that the Fed keeps saying, we're okay with where policy is. We're okay with the expectations because inflation expectations have stayed anchored. They're about to become unanchored if this continues. And once they become unanchored, then you even start to introduce the possibility of more hikes back onto the table, right? And that is something that I think would really give the market a lot of consternation. The last chart I want to talk about, this is really the humdinger. Yield and stock correlation set to flip again, ? Okay, I know there's a lot happening here. Usually, you've got yields up, stocks down. Usually, it's an inverse relationship, right? We've broken it up into three time periods here. If you look at April through July of 2023, those are the blue dots. You have the same thing as what's happened year to date, which is the purple dots. Yields up, stocks up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a broken relationship. It's not usually how it works. And then you've got August through December of 2023, yields up, stocks down. That is usually how it works. This week, and this goes to Dan's tweet as well, this week that relationship started to flip. We've got yields up 20 basis points in the 10-year, stocks faltering, commodities rallying, driving inflation expectations up. The tone has shifted, and I'm suggesting that it's possible the relationship changes again and we see yields up, stocks down.
I'm with you on that. And what you mentioned, crude oil, which is important, what nobody seemingly is talking about, which they should be, and what we've tried to hammer home is the fact that crude is one thing. Gasoline is something entirely different. And the reason why we talk about the refiners real quickly, Amanda, if you want to just throw up in a Valero chart, for example, and then we can look at Phillips 66 PSX, but you'll see that these stocks are actually telling the story of what's going on. Valero shouldn't
5-year. I want to see a 5-year.
Shouldn't trade that way. No, it's going to look eerily similar. And we've talked about this for yes. And you finally got through those highs and we're off to the races. Now, I'm not saying to go out and buy Valero today. That's the name we've been talking about. But clearly the refiners are saying something. And Paul PSX, which is a similar company, it's not as pure play as a Valero, but you can see a very similar chart here. So
funny guy, you get tagged every once in a while, maybe just because I look at that. Look at that breakout after a multi-year period. It's pretty epic. You've been pounding the table on these refiners for a very long time. You get tagged as a bear all the time because you could make a call on the S&P 500 here and there. It's kind of interesting because I've seen lots of really bullish breakouts that have been on the Guy Adami train over the last 6 months or so. Gold, one of them. I want to go back to that data for a second, Guy, that you know that Liz was talking about here. So Amanda mocked this up a little bit. So if we're talking about the period of December 2018 to the pause period that we had in the S&P 500 to August 1st, 2019. Look at that. So you have a 19% gain. So that's one of the reasons why you're tracking, right?
Yeah.
This sort of data. And again, this is, you know, past performance is not going to be indicative of future returns and all that sort of stuff here. I thought it would be interesting to kind of say, to look at it versus, let's say, so right now we're July 23rd, okay, to let's say April 3rd. But if we go get all the way to November 7th, that would be that long pause that you're talking about. And we've already have a 14% gain here, okay? So I think that's kind of interesting. Now, I want to do one other thing. I want to plot it against the Russell 2000. So the Russell back in that December 2018 period to August 2019 was up 19%, basically in lockstep with the S&P. Let's look at the Russell right now, okay? So we just talked about a 14% gain. Look at it. It's only up 5%. So this is, I guess, a question for Liz. What do you think the underperformance by the Russell 2000 suggests? What's different this time about that prior period of the pause?
Yields didn't go down.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, the pause happens and it allows for cyclicality to resurface. It allows for people to get excited about the possibility that the economy will avoid recession. By the way, we always get excited about the possibility that the economy will avoid recession and the market will rally on that possibility. Small caps included, because small caps are a huge part of the American economy, the majority of our labor force. If yields don't go down, though, and get back to a level where all of these small caps tried to reach their prior high, they can't finance their own growth yet. That's the definition of a small cap, that you want to be the next generation of blue chips. You go from small cap to mid cap to large cap. That's the success story of forever and a day. But if yields stay as high as they are, where do they get their growth from?
Yeah, but Guy, the other point is we were talking about like potential headwinds to margins. If you are a small cap company and you rely on debt to help fund your business and that sort of thing, and then you refi, you know, certain debt at higher prices and wages are higher and input costs are higher, this or whatever, like that's going to be a thing. And I wonder, Guy, does this feed into the fact that you said pretty soon we're going to be at 4%, above 4% in unemployment?
Yeah.
If small to medium sized companies employ, what, 2/3 of Americans, at some point, isn't that where the rub's going to be? We don't spend a lot of time talking about layoffs at large, you know, companies here too much anymore. That was a 2 year ago thing. So is this where we're going to see some of the pressure maybe on employment or unemployment going higher?
I think so. And I'm looking at the components of the IWM. So these things are completely skewed sometimes. Like every once in a while, you get these wild cards that come in. Super Microcomputer is a, when I say large, it's an overweight in terms of, I think, where the Russell is in form of the IWM. And then MicroStrategy as well. They're obviously very, very individual stories in terms of what's going on. MicroStrategy clearly has been rallying on the back of what Bitcoin is doing, and Super Microcomputer is its own animal. So the Russell is a fascinating thing through the lens of what you would think would be the small caps. Yeah, if unemployment starts to go meaningfully higher, yeah, it's going to affect the most economically sensitive names, but it's skewed by those two names at the top. Just something to think about.
But and I guess my point, most importantly, is that the underperformance, even with the performance of a Super Micro, underperformance might suggest, might point to some of the things that you've been talking about with the unemployment rate being the thing that ticks it off. And especially if some of these inflationary pressures, which just 3 months ago, a lot of bullish investors did not think was going to be a headwind towards earnings, S&P earnings and the like here. Let's do this really quickly, because this is a chart that I think we've looked at a couple times here, the S&P 500 versus the 10-year. It also speaks to Dan's tweets and potentially the sort of divergence here. At some point, Liz, would you expect to see, and I think this is what you just suggested here, especially with some of the data that's going to be in your note, at some point, the S&P is going to have a 10% pullback. And, you know, yields could be right here. They could be at 435, and the S&P could pull back. It could be at 445 or 455. If it's 455, I would almost a certainty that we're going to have a pullback. So thoughts here on how this kind of resolves itself, because this is the big question I think a lot of folks are focused on, is that, listen, Guy, you are in a camp where you think we could make a straight shot to 5%, right? Like if we start to see us in the 10-year.
I think yields are going higher. Okay. I've said that before. Listen, he says that on the way up, I sound like a genius. When it went from 5 to 3.8, I looked like a dipshit, which often happens. And now we're getting from 3.8, you know, think of this move from 3.8% to, you know, north of 4.3. I mean, that's pretty interesting move.
Get priced out of this year, and then all of a sudden we start seeing hikes being priced. Where's the S&P 500? It's 5,200.
Lower than this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, the run up in the S&P starting in October was predicated mainly on the idea that cuts were going to start, or that we had somehow solved the inflation problem, and that it would continue falling at that same rate, and that public enemy number one was now gone, and the economy survived it. If we get to a point, I mean, there's two big transitions that would need to happen. Cuts would have to completely get priced out for this year, or maybe get pushed to December. And then you've got no cuts before the election even. And then you have to start even considering the idea of, you know, what if we didn't get a handle on inflation? Here's what I think would happen first, though. Oil keeps rising. The commodity complex keeps rising. You get inflation that starts to tick back up and start to knock on 4%'s door again. That's what the market would not like. And I think that would be the driver of most of this.
All right. So I want to hit a few single stock names here, Guy, before we get to some of the questions. So put your questions in. I know Amanda has been taking them here. So this is one, and you've used this expression. I think it makes a lot of sense. There was headlines, I think about 2 weeks ago, that Intel was getting $8.5 billion from the CHIPS Act. That's just kind of, you know, wars, go build a foundry or foundries here, and then access to, you know, $11.5-12 billion in, you know, low interest grants and the like here. The company held this meeting. Let's pull the Intel chart up here. Held this, I guess it was a conference call talking about the build out.
They were actually foundries. Pat Gelsinger was actually at the NASDAQ yesterday.
And so they talked about some of the losses associated. I think everybody that, like, you know, I was listening to you like break it down on Fast Money last night. I've read some other things. This is going to be a very front-end loaded sort of situation. They're going to take these losses here. But once you build this infrastructure going forward, this should be something very welcomed here, right?
I think so.
So what do you do with this thing here? Again, you know, they've missed a couple of these cycles here. They don't have the Gen AI chips. They're not competing with NVIDIA. Well,
I mean, missed a cycle is being, I think you're being kind, more than generous. I mean, they've missed the entire...
Did you warm up to this thing somewhere pretty soon?
Here. I think, look at the moving average. Look where we are now. I mean, again, Intel, they can't get out of their own way. And we talked about it last night, and they've missed. You know why they missed it? Because they got lazy. You know why they got lazy? Because it was just Intel. Yeah. And the only reason AMD existed for a decade was so Intel wouldn't be a monopoly. I mean, that's flat out true. AMD was getting dragged along, but something happened along the way. AMD, when you allow a team to hang around, right, when you should be beating the shit out of them, like you allow – the Giants allow the Packers to sort of hang around. Yeah. That's the worst thing that can happen, because then you give those teams the opportunity to get their sea legs, and then they come and they beat you. And I think that's what happened to a certain extent with AMD and Intel. With all that said, Intel's going to be in a pretty interesting place. I think they're if they play their cards right, they say we're a Homeland Security play, built in America, all that bullshit that people love. And this stock could be a value play right here. So the fact that we're down today, holding the moving average, you know, I think this is one you want to play from the long side.
Yeah, one other thing I just want to say about the market too. Like, so let's look at NVIDIA here. It seems like stuck here at $900. And again, Guy, you've mentioned that kind of March 8th reversal day.
100%.
We almost made a crack at that. We didn't break it. It got back towards there. It's kind of hanging around here. And then the other one that's really interesting to me is AMD. And again, we've talked about it. That last quarter they reported Q4, and the guidance they gave for Q1 wasn't particularly great. It was January 31st. It got caught up in the little NVIDIA, you know, kind of whatever you want to call that, about a month and a half ago, but it's since pulled back. So the semi trade is stalling a little bit, in my opinion. So I think that's something to really keep an eye on, and especially at a time where, you know, Apple trades really poorly. You saw the way Tesla's been punished after its disappointing fundamentals. If a company like AMD, which is not NVIDIA, let's be clear, people, if they give actually poor guidance for Q2, I actually think that you're going to see lots of other semis really sell off. And if NVIDIA can't guide, just so you guys know, I mean, earnings estimates this year and sales are expected to be up 80% this year. So if you're looking at this thing trading at 36 times the NVIDIA, you say, well, it's really cheap. Well, go look at next year. Okay. So next year it's trading at about 30 times expected EPS growth of 22%. That's a massive deceleration. If there's any risk to that, then at 17 times sales next year, expensive. You've been saying this, it looks really expensive. So that's how you get to some of this. I just wanted to bring that up. Guy, we didn't hit these names really quickly. Will you touch UNH and Humana here? So let's pull up the UNH. These are not small.
No, stocks. UNH is, in terms of market cap, it's the largest component in the Dow. And one of the reasons the Dow traded as poorly as it did, yes, but so UNH was hanging in there for a while. And, you know, Humana was out there. I mean, all these different in the same world, these stocks were getting obliterated, but UNH was holding their own until obviously yesterday, and we saw what happened. So a longer term chart, I think, will be helpful. And one of the things I said on the show, I mean, we're at levels where it absolutely you can see. Yeah. I mean, you can draw a line across those bottoms and see. I said we have to hold these levels. And it appears as though we're giving it a run here. But this is going to – listen – you could say, you know what, I want to play from alongside UNH. It's too good of a company valuation, blah, blah, blah. Other people say major double top through the moving average. If we break those prior lows, this thing is going to trade to levels we haven't seen since 2021. That's stock market stuff. Humana has been its own disaster for quite some time. I mean, Humana was a year ahead of this whole, well, you know, 9 months ahead of this whole thing, if you look. I mean, so here we are now in Humana, and we've broken those prior lows. So now you say, holy shit, you know, how much lower can this thing go? And the fact that the moving average is trading lower, this is a broken stock. I mean, without question, it's a broken stock.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring UNH up again. It was a $500 billion market cap company a few months ago. Now it's 4.25 or so. It's down 20, you know, almost 20% from its highs. This is the cheap stock. This is double-digit expected earnings and sales growth, trading about 16 times now, and there are fundamental headwinds. So I just wanted to bring that up. One last stock, and we're going to get to a bunch of questions for Liz.
Okay, a question about healthcare.
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you do with it knowing that it's an election year?
Oh, really? I love that, because typically these companies have a huge bullseye on their back in election years. And I think today the president was with, what's his name from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, talking about healthcare and the fact. I think that's another reason why these things are really tough. And I'm telling you, at a certain point, the bullseye is going to be on the back of companies like Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, to the extent that they can talk about that.
Just on pricing and some of these drugs. Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah, we've seen it the last two presidential election years. But I just wanted to bring it up again. This is not a small company.
No.
You know what I mean? Big stock. Last one I wanted to hit here, because again, I think it falls into this category. Quietly, it's down 11%. Look at Costco here. Okay. Yeah. So this company, that you would have thought this was part of the AI or the GLP-1 trade or something like that. Look at the way this stock has moved since it broke out late last year. And it was trading at an all-time high, had that huge gap lower after earnings, consolidated a bit. Now it's making new lows.
Can
it's down 11%.
Right. Can Amanda sort of expand, make this bigger? Let's keep that chart, just make it bigger, and then draw a circle around that sort of gap island that we created.
Oh, yes.
You have a huge, look at that. Yes. Yeah. Squish it up so you can start to see that island reversal, man. That is a powerful, very powerful thing. And you saw that. So what can happen here? Well, finally, I think valuation started to kick in with Costco. Nobody gave a shit about valuation forever. 94% in terms of their, you know, you have your little Costco card, your membership. I mean, that's recurring revenue for a company like that's a big deal,
but
which
it's
is
like
why they
3 or 4%.
But it's
revenue.
You know what? But that's a reason why you get the premium valuation, because you have clarity and stuff. Anyway, with that said, valuation's a concern now. I think you're looking for a place to buy it, but I don't think it's here. And real quick, since we're playing individual stocks before questions, you want to talk about other commodities that nobody seemingly is talking about but us. Look at Freeport-McMoRan FCX over the last couple weeks. Look at where this stock is now and look at where it's been. I mean, this thing has been basically lower left, upper right. This is trading like an AI name. And obviously it's because copper is breaking out. Here we are. Look at these levels. We're at really critical levels here. So all those people that there with the inflation is not a problem. Bullshit. I mean, it's not only a problem in energy, it's a problem now in industrial commodities, in industrial metals and soft commodities. Put up DBA real quick. Now I'm on my horse.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, this thing has been lower left, upper right as well. And this is another. You want to just, this is one. Look at that.
Hard to chase here, though.
I'm not saying, that's not my point at all. My point is like, the inflation dragon has not been slayed.
Yeah. So look at this DBA, Liz. I just want to pull, like, draw a horizontal line from the high in 2022. Okay. And like, so for those who agree with everything, guys been talking about this sort of stuff. Let's make it a little straighter here, please, people. That's going to bug me. You know, like a check back, right? A check. All right. It's still not straight. A check like back a to, you know, that breakout level, that's where you would kind of look to buy one of these things, especially.
But again, this is just a thematic thing.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I'm just curious. Thoughts on some of the stuff.
I mean, you have to think about what was going on. I mean, this is agriculture we're talking about, right? Think about what was going on in early 2022. We had a war that broke out that affected a lot of wheat stocks and affected the commodities that are agriculture based. The bullish story on agriculture has long been that we have an emerging consumer in emerging markets and that as they emerge and spend more money, they eat more protein, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. Emerging markets have been dragging along, mostly dragged by China, but have not really come into play there. This is a huge breakout that I think is mostly inflation driven, and the metals are following suit, and they're not necessarily connected, but I think it's something that's concerning.
So Liz, are you keeping an eye? We talked about it Monday morning on the tape. There was some manufacturing data out of China over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Guy and I spent a little time talking about it this week. I mean, if some of the China data starts to really inflect, let's pull up the FXI here for a second.
FXI is holding in there.
Yeah. So you mentioned it last night, Guy, on Fast Money, but if the Chinese economy is starting to bottom, at some point you would expect the demand for all of the things that we just talked about, ags, you know, industrial commodities, you know, oil, everything, just to kind of get going here a little bit.
Yes. And then you'll hear the rebuttal, which is that if China gets going again, they can export more and there's more cheap things available. So that's actually disinflationary. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of an offsetting mechanism that would end up being, but there will be a reaction in the commodity complex. And maybe that's already what's happening, is some of that reaction, knowing that we've got an Asian consumer that might come back online and produce demand for those commodities. I don't know if that's part of it, but it will drive commodity prices higher. And then we see inflation issues. And look, here's the other thing. We now are in a place where central banks around the globe are not moving in the same direction anymore. Mm-hmm. So if inflation reheats in one region and is decelerating in another region, you've got currency volatility 100%. Up the wazoo. And we already have a ton of currency volatility because of what's happening in Japan. So even if inflation is still under control or seemingly under control where we are, what if it overheats somewhere else? And, you know, then you've got this currency issue that I continue to talk about. And I'm surprised that not more people are talking about the currency stuff.
I love that. I love her for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah.
That is one of them. We've been talking about that shit. Dollar yen. I mean, the Japanese are screwed, by the way, the great wazoo, all these shows, it's amazing. And we're going to go to questions in a second. Like, all these shows are great shows. Like, that show Friends, there were six of them, right?
Not great.
I like the show.
Not really.
But then they had to introduce, like, they feel it necessary to, like, to introduce another character. Like, typically it's a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Yeah. That's when it goes off. Happy Days. You know what they did? They brought Robin Williams in to be Mork from Ork.
Yeah. Like,
seriously?
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about jumping the effing shark.
Well, you know, jumping the shark, where it came from.
Happy Days.
Yeah.
The other one was, if you think about the Flintstones, I mean, it was just Barney and Fred and Wilma and the other one.
Yeah,
what's
also
her name?
House
Betty.
In the Prairie. It's
No. But they brought in the Great Wazoo.
Oh,
some friggin' guy.
At the Rangers game the other night. Did you watch? You watched Ozark, right?
Huh?
I've watched some of it. Yeah.
Oh, aren't you a big Jason Bateman fan? Because they brought Bateman in. Wasn't Bateman on Little House on the Prairie? Wasn't he like a little kid?
You know, who was on Little House on the Prairie? Melissa Francis.
Oh yeah.
Of CNBC fan. I know you're not a fan, but Melissa Francis,
yeah, she's a
back in the early days of Fast Money.
She went over to Fox and she became.
Okay. But I'm just saying, like, she, like her, the, she was a child star. She wrote a book about all
the lovelies
that shit.
Who leave CNBC and go to Fox.
Pull up a slide. We made a slide with a question. I love this stuff. I mean, because when we do these things, we should use them.
Yeah.
Tom asks, I love that. Last week, Liz talked about two things to watch. Number of S&P stocks above their 200-day moving average. Number of stocks at all-time highs. Can Dan and or Guy ask her, Elizabeth, where do you get this info? I have looked all over and I cannot find the information.
Well, where do you get this?
Well, I get it from Mario.
Yeah.
I'm happy to have him provide provide it. You can get it from any of the data providers. Dan wants me to say that you can get it from FactSet.
Well, we get it. We get ours.
Some
from
people
FactSet.
Get it from Bloomberg. Yeah. Other people get it from their data provider. I'm unbiased, but you can get it from most of those providers that have a contract with the S&P, which is not always readily available to the public.
Yeah. Where do you get yours, Guy?
Huh?
Where do you get your data from?
The FactSet. Yeah. I get it from Elizabeth. I get it from Mario. Yeah. Rangers just have a defenseman, Mario Marwa.
Yeah.
You okay. know what? You Mario nobody cares. And I just talked about this the other day. I said, how come people in New York say Mario?
What should you say? Mario.
He said it's specifically Mario.
Well, you know what? I don't give a shit what he said. And if he's watching, you're Mario to
maybe
me.
It's like
Super Mario Brothers.
Well, an Italian Mario.
I call it Mario.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. Well, Gary Webb asks, I don't know if you can throw this up or not. Otherwise, I'll read the question. In your judgment, this is more probably for Elizabeth. At what rate will the equity market become fearful in terms of the 10-year yield?
4.5 is
when
fear comes in. 5 is where we got really scared last time. 5 is also where mortgage rates will hit 8% again. And that fear will already be present at that point. But 5% is probably more spooky than
I like spooky. We have a question from Fernando Ortegon.
Yeah.
Will Netflix surpass $700? So the prior all-time high in Netflix, I think, was $690, I think, back maybe a little bit higher, back in the fall of 2021. So let's pull up a chart longer term, and you'll see. I mean, obviously, Netflix had a cascade lower. And then the subsequent move higher. My problem here is all those gaps that were created to the downside have been filled, but now we have a gap on the downside that it subsequently should be filled at some point. So we filled the gaps as we traded back up, and now there's a gap. I think we're going to stall at those October highs. However, you could say, you know what? I want to buy the breakout. I think that's what you have to wait for here. I think Netflix went from very expensive to very cheap. Now it's expensive again. I think it trades like 33 times this year's numbers.
You know, but here's the thing. For this fiscal year, 35% expected earnings growth, 24% next year, 43% margins, which are really good, actually.
No, that's why the Disney is like, why can't – one of the problems, that the old dude's got a bug up his ass. You know who the old
Nelson
dude is?
Yeah.
It's because how come your margins are pale in comparison? And that's a great question. There's not an answer. Anyway,
No, and what I think is interesting about that is that so low teens expected sales growth. You know, look at Spotify, if they could pull that up today. This is a company expected to do $15.5 billion in revenues this year, up 17%. Gross margin for this company is 27% versus a Netflix at 43%. I have long argued that Netflix, which is obviously the clear runaway winner in the streaming wars, and what happens next in video streaming is very different because it really is about linear TV and unbundling and cord cutting and all that sort of stuff. Netflix is going to benefit any which way. They're going to have more concentrated competition if there's some M&A. I think Netflix should vertically integrate a bit. I think they should buy a company like Spotify. I know it's nearing all-time highs. It's got a $56 billion market cap. That is 20% of the market cap guy of Netflix right now. But talk about something that could be accretive if they were able to take out a lot of costs and bring Spotify margins up much higher from 27% to 40% or something like where they are. This would be a really smart move, in my opinion.
You've said that a number of times that somebody should sort of, you know, bolt on Spotify. I mean, it's not cheap. It's a $60 billion company. I think that probably means it's a $75 billion deal. However, in today's world, I mean, there are companies that can do that. I mean, I'm not saying that Apple needs to do it necessarily, but there are companies out there that clearly have the wherewithal in terms of their stock price to do an acquisition of this, Matt. We'll see. Here's a good question from Matt Walter. This is more Elizabeth, and I'm not looking to set you up, but you can answer this. Is there a certain industry that would be a leading indicator for a recession or hard landing? Ooh. Banks, chips, industrials, EY from SoFi.
Construction employment.
Exactly. And trucking, if you look at the trucking numbers as well, I agree with
trucking. We did trucking. Remember, Dallas got the soft machine, but it's not what I thought it was.
Well,
so here's the thing. People always want to watch the labor market and think that it's some kind of leading indicator. It's maybe initial jobless claims become a leading indicator, but it happens so soon, so close to the actual event that it doesn't really count. But construction employment, so this is things like housing, building houses, right, which is obviously a very cyclical piece. there is a very tight relationship. We haven't updated the chart in a while, but I've tweeted it in the past, and I think we've even put it in some blogs. So I'm happy to update that with Mario and send it out in an email or however. I don't know. How do we?
Yeah, we have show notes. We have a newsletter. Okay. Hey, by the way, if you want that newsletter,
look at your inbox.
Yeah, go to riskrehearsal.com. Sign up for it right there. Look at these guys, and you'll have all that. And we'll put that thing that she just mentioned and it'll be in the show notes.
Thingamabob.
Okay.
Wait, but I want to ask it really quickly. So J.B. Hunt is down 11% from its recent highs. That's a big trucking logistics company. Uh-huh. Like, are some of these stocks starting to show some signs? How are some of these rails doing, guy? You grew up on the rails, didn't you?
I mean, it's interesting. One of the reasons the transports are hanging in there and form the IYT is because a couple names like UNP, for example, which had a huge run. It sold off a bit, if you look. I mean, it had a huge run up, subsequent move down. Back up. I mean, we're right at important levels. You can say, you know what? We're making this little, we're trading sideways that Luis Yamada person, the longer in outer space,
the longer the rear end space.
Is or something. Yeah. I don't know. But one of the reasons the IYT is comprised of the U's. You want to know what they are?
Uber.
Keep going.
Union Pacific.
Give me another U.
UPS.
There you go. Look at you.
See, look, man. I pay attention.
It's the cheapest thing you can do. Yeah. But valuation is reasonable. Well, but if the question is, if there is a slowdown, obviously you're going to see it in the form of the rails. So Elizabeth was able to answer that question extraordinarily well. Here's one for you. And I like this question because they're completely different things. Where was that damn thing about the XL? Wavy McFly, which I don't think he was born that way. Like, I don't think he came out of the womb and his mother, who was a McFly, said, let's name him Wavy. It's probably some, right?
Yeah.
It's a pseudonym.
Pseudonym.
XLE, XLK, two entirely different things. Looks like a generational buying opportunity. Well, XLE, yes. XLK obviously is a technology thing. I would say no. So throw up an XLE chart.
Let's define generational buying opportunity.
I don't know what it means.
Well, that would mean
I really don't know what it means.
At a sort of low. Like, you would say that, like, if you wanted to buy the S&P at 666 in March of 2009,
that was a generational low.
You'd say this is a generational low. We will not see this. So I'm not taking issue with the structure of the question.
I understand what you're saying. I don't think these are either generational buying opportunities. But I will say this. If you do longer-term XLE, it's amazing. Everybody's hated energy. And I've brought up a number of times that, you know, XLE is hanging around. And here we are. Exxon, Chevron, Conoco. Those are the big three.
What about your OIH?
I think it's paying 335 or so. This is off the top of my head. Am I right or am I wrong?
You are. It's 347.
Oh, wow. I was talking about the ratio between XLE and XLK.
Let's go back to that then. Hold on.
You know
a second.
What? Thank you for that, Elizabeth. I think you're right.
Yeah.
What would we do without her?
I don't know. So
we'd answer a lot of questions wrong.
So this is like a Carter Worth thing. XLE divided by XLK.
All right. So you're saying that the XLE on a relative basis is very cheap.
That's right.
Which is really important because that chart that we just showed you on a near-term basis has nothing to do with valuation. Looks extended. But relative to how extended the XLK is and how much the XLE has underperformed
the XLK.
She
looked at that.
Thank you, Liz.
You know what? When Carter is back with us.
We'll have him do that.
Well, XLK versus XLE. So, Wavy, stick around. We'll see you on Monday. You know what I mean?
Mr. McFly.
Right there.
Mr. McFly.
Jay Ford is asking, let's hear it for gold. I think he put like a smiley face emoji or something.
Oh, yeah,
dude, seriously, don't use emojis. I mean, honestly, unless
Jay,
you're like,
you know what, Jay, do whatever you want.
No, don't do whatever you want. I appreciate the question. I'm trying to help him. Don't be that person.
No, that emoji is like a little kiss. So what he's doing to you
he's got a party hat on and a bazooka thing.
Okay, so he's partying. He's basically saying he knows that guy's brought up gold every day for the last 3 months as it's been on its way to new highs.
If I start using things like that.
Emojis, just put you out.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Any price target? I think throw up a gold chart. Gold's been hanging in there like a friggin' champ. It's hanging in there with yields going higher. It's hanging in there with the dollar going higher. It's hanging in there with Bitcoin. You know, this
it's doing more than hanging in there.
It's doing much more than hanging in there. Let's see a five-year chart
because I think this looks like a runaway breakout. This looks like the longer the base.
We should have the higher in outer space. Yeah. I don't know what the hell it's like a spinal tap.
But this is
the bigger the cushion, the sweeter. That's a spinal tap song. Big bottom.
Let's not go there. Yeah. But let's look at a high from the 2020. Just draw that horizontal line.
It's going higher.
See what it is. But a nice little check back, people. This is what you want to do. See, oh, look at that. Look at how straight that is.
Maybe
back and fill to that breakout level.
You
think
so?
That's the point. Yeah,
I don't think so, but you may.
I don't know. Do you think gold trades on technicals?
Oh yeah, I think commodities trade
in this environment.
Yeah, I do.
It's interesting. I'll agree with Elizabeth here. I mean, we'll see.
All right, let's do a 1-year chart for a second. So you see that consolidation, that little flag that it made after it broke out. So it went up in a straight line.
Do you remember Colonel Flag in MASH?
Yeah,
he was a great character.
Yeah. But so to me, I think you'll have a pullback towards that kind of, you know, what do you want to call that 2200 level? You know what I mean? Let's see how it acts there. Let's see where the dollar is. You know, one thing that's helping you today, guy, is they see the move in the dollar. Let's pull up the Dixie for a second, the DXY.
Well,
that's kind of, I know you're going to say, well, 55 cents or something like that. That's a big move in the dollar here. So let's spread that out a little bit. So maybe did the dollar just top out?
I don't think so. I mean, we
if it did, that'd be good for your gold.
Maybe. Perhaps.
That's not even the relationship problems.
Yeah.
The dollar's been rising. Gold's been rising.
We had relationship problems, Liz. Us.
So I tweeted on April 1st, and it was not an April Fool's joke. This was a serious tweet. I put a chart up of the gold miners and gold itself.
Mm-hmm.
And they have diverted, right? The miners have done a good amount of catching up.
Mm-hmm.
But the lines probably do have to come back together in some way, shape, or form. If you're right, Dan, then that means that the miners continue moving upward a little bit and gold catches down. So we'll see. I mean,
on March 12th, by the way, on March 12th on Market Call, Guy laid out a bullish case for the GDX, why the gold miners would play catch up to the commodity. We detailed an April call spread, the 30-34 call spread. We updated that last week on the Market Call. And it's interesting. Here we are at $33. And that was a heck of a call. So that was a 10% move.
Blind squirrel.
But the point was, you had a fundamental take. You had a technical take why you thought it was going to have another leg. And oftentimes when we detail trade ideas using strikes, using expirations, you're basically putting a price out there in the future that you need a stock or an ETF in this case to get above to be profitable. It's a really hard thing to do. It's one of the reasons why I think on Market Call, we are trying to do, we said this year, we're going to do more and more of this in the futures and the options.
And we've been
true
to our word.
No, I know. But that was a great way, Guy, with defined risk to play for a 10% move. So good on you.
Do you know who Colonel Flagg is?
No.
Do you a MASH fan?
My mom was. I have watched it.
She's a young guy.
Yeah.
What the F does that mean? Seriously, I don't understand what age has anything to do. People say, like, I'll say something, for example, like, do you know who Ty Cobb was? And people say, were you not born with George Washington? I mean, it's the same thing.
You
know who these people
are. Something, but the fact that if you would know the show.
Yeah, but don't give me the reason.
I know the show. Yeah. I know the show.
Great show.
I could recognize the theme song.
Colonel Flagg was one of the great characters. He's probably in about 8 episodes, but every episode he just freaking crushed it. Last question, I promise, because this cat's with us all the time. And he was not born. Matrix of Compassion. Like, again, he did not come out of the womb. His mother said, oh, let's name him Matrix of Compassion, because that would be dumb. Dan, I know that you close options contracts when they either have a 50% loss or 100% gain. I don't think you close them at 100% gain. We've talked about taking half off and letting, however, noted, do you ever look at follow large options flows? This is right up your alley. In other words, unusual activity or close based on levels of a chart.
These are great questions.
They are.
So let's do this. Let's start with this.
I like his bald head. Do you think that's him? What? He's not bald?
Listen, you're on your way, guy. So Matrix,
bullshit.
Be compassionate for my main man guy here. He's going to be with you soon enough. And listen, you know, that's a good looking head. All right.
Thank you.
So a couple things. So when we detail these trade ideas, part of it is really just being, you know, just having the mindset about risk management, right? Okay, anybody can just litter their portfolio, buy calls, buy puts, this, that, whatever. If they just sit there in your portfolio and the underlyings do nothing, you are going to lose money, right? So you have to do this tactically and you have to manage the risk. So if you get something that starts going in your direction, let's say you have 100% gain, and let's say you bought 2 contracts, let's say you bought 10 contracts, the idea of taking half off the table to me makes a lot of sense. That is a practice that I've done routinely and it's helped me out. Now you could say, well, part of the stock market is letting your winners ride a little bit. That's different when you're trading stocks, and then your time horizon is different. The clock is always working against you as long premium trades and options. The flip side of that is that to the downside, once you get to a point where, let's say you paid a dollar for an out of the money call, and let's say the stock has gone nowhere to lower and it's at 50 cents, the probability of you getting it back to even and making money is decreasing like every minute that you hold it. So I just use
theta 50, bleed.
Yes. And I just use 50% as just a, you know, just as a mental stop here. You want to start moving your feet. Large options flow. So unusual activity. To me, it's a bit of a fugazi. If you think about the way the markets trade right now and how interrelated all these different asset classes are, if you're just going to look up on the screen and say lots of calls are trading, you don't know what it's trading at. You don't know if it's delta hedge. You don't know if it's against an underlying or anything like that. So to me, I don't think it's particularly useful. And then closed on levels of the charts. One of the reasons why we often detail chart levels before we give an options trade idea is we're looking at levels of support, resistance, and the like here. And to me, that helps inform the strikes that I use. Oftentimes, you'll say, guy, you'll say, well, Dan, why are you buying a call spread? You know what I mean? Well, I'm selling a call at a level that's telling me, the options market's telling me low probability that it gets above that. And the chart is telling me from a technical standpoint that that's technical resistance if the stock were to get there, that it could pause. So that's why I use technical levels.
Wow. A detailed answer.
Sorry, too much?
No. By the way, Colonel Flagg was portrayed by Edward Winter, not to be confused with Edgar Winter, who played the song Frankenstein.
Yes,
his brother was Johnny Winter.
Yeah. He's a blues. Johnny Winter is a blues guitarist.
I think that's it for the day. Elizabeth has things to do, like get her hair done, for example.
Redone.
That's pretty funny.
Once this weather pattern moves through, I'll do my hair again.
What?
The blowy. You get a blow. No, that's what they call
a blowout.
A blowout. I saw it on a blowout shop the other day. I'm walking there, and they said, "Come in and get a blowy."
Excuse me.
That's right.
Okay. You get arrested.
Anyway, I think we're done.
No, we're clearly done. I've So people know there wasn't. I didn't say that.
I said it because I read it on a window.
I'm pretty sure it's on tape that somebody said it.
That's it for today's market call. I want to thank Elizabeth Young. That'd be EY from SoFi. When she goes to when she's out now. You can see people murmuring.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's EY.
I think they're also saying get your money right
on one app.
Yeah. And I think they're also
they
saying
should
that.
Be.
Yeah.
That is a great saying.
It is a good saying.
But she's become like she's transcended. Like now she is like she walks around New York. It's like, holy shit, that's EY from SoFi.
I mean, listen, she came to SoFi from one of the oldest financial institution in America. That
first
would be
stock
bank,
traded
that
on
would
New
be
York Stock ba- Exchange.
First bank in New York. Did you know that?
Phony.
Alexander Hamilton founded that. And now she's at one of, I think, probably one of the coolest kind of fintech, you know, investment.
No, but think about the balls it took for her. She left the Midwest to come to New York. No, I admire that shit.
To work for Alexander Hamilton.
You know, well, we should put this in the show notes. So back in 2021, I think it was the summer of 2021, Liz, you and I had just met. She came on
like the HTR.
She came, yes, she was on the Halftime Report. She came on the On the Tape podcast, and we got her backstory. We got how she got from Minnesota. Milwaukee to New York.
By the way, I'm going to tell you something right now. Yeah. The Packers are going to be, they're going to be a damn good football team this year. No, I'm just telling you.
I know you think that.
It gives me no pleasure to say it, but it's going to happen. And I love the fact that the Brewers came in and beat the shit out of the Mets.
Swept them.
And Rhys Hoskins, I don't know what his problem is with the Mets. I love it. I love everything about it.
What's going to be going on in the NFC, in the Norris division? If you have Caleb Williams running all over.
He's going to be, you know
really?
What?
Versus
yeah,
Jordan
really.
Love, that's going to be an interesting matchup.
Let me tell you something right now. He might be the 15th best football player in the draft. Football player. No, don't look at me crazy. I understand you need a quarterback in this league. I'm not sold on him at all. Drake May, big kid. You know what?
Yeah.
I get it.
So you would have kept Justin Fields and you would have traded.
I like Justin Fields. You got to give these kids time.
Yeah.
That's just me. But what the hell do I know? And then J.J. McCarthy is going to go in the top five. It's a joke.
Yeah.
The best football player in this draft, arguably, is Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah.
Who might not be the first receiver picked, as it turns
out.
His
dad was a great
Everybody
receiver
loves for, these, for this kid from LSU, aren't. Malik Nabers.
Yeah,
that wasn't on your bingo card. And the kid from Washington, Odunze, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. Joe Alt out of Notre Dame, Elizabeth's looking for her shit already. He's going to be the first tackle picked. And, you know, Brock Bowers from Georgia, the tight end, stud.
Yeah.
You don't care about any of this.
I'm, you know, listen, we're still in Ranger hockey. We're getting 100% into the playoffs here. Your Yankees are off to a 5-1 start.
They got shut out last night.
Yeah, but you got to be happy.
By the way, for you four Met fans that are still watching, it's embarrassing. It really is embarrassing. They ran out opening day. Didn't effing rain that day. They could have played that game, number one. Okay, fine. Last night, it's shitty all night. They made their fans wait until like 9:30 to call that game. I mean, that honestly.
Cold and wet. It was nasty out last night.
But that's typical Met bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. All right. Listen, this was a lot of fun. Liz,
I had
thanks
fun.
Thanks for sticking around here. Thanks Elizabeth to SoFi. Like, thanks to FactSet. Thanks to Guy Adami here. Thanks to all of you guys being here. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern for the Market Call.